Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Commonwealth Club. I feel really compelled to say that the Commonwealth Club is an unbelievably wonderful organization, and if you don't belong, you might just consider it. It's you can come to every presentation we have on Monday and Friday for free. So there you go. And I'm really, really delighted that we have these speakers today. I'm a baby boomer. I can remember in the late 60s and early 70s, the world was mine. That's what we were told. But they didn't tell us the truth. And it's very important to hear a talk like this. This is a wonderful organization. The coming of age barrier celebrates the ability of all people age 50 and over to continue to grow, transform their communities, and become a force for public good. Whether you're retired, you're between jobs, or you're just looking at new options, they offer Explore Your Future workshops, community events, and extraordinary volunteering opportunities for people 50 and over, of which I am one. They also offer a unique service to their members, like personalized matching to ensure the best fit with nonprofits in San Francisco and Alameda counties. It is a wonderful organization. And here's Dr. Fleming, delighted to see you, as always. My boss here, actually. And there's some very useful brochures and flyers and information on the table outside. Please help yourself to that. The speakers have said that after a lot of time is up, they're happy to stick around and answer questions. And speaking of questions, there are some question forms on the seats. If you have any questions for me, fill them out and just pass them to the left. Myself or somebody else will collect them and we'll give them to the speakers and they'll read them out. And so regarding the speakers, we have Noreen McKeon, great Irish name, and I probably pronounced it wrong. And she's the program manager at Coming of Age. Noreen has decades of management and volunteer development experience with nonprofit organizations, including Burt Children's Center, West Marin Senior Services, Planned Parenthood, and AIDS Project of the East Bay. The other speaker is Mr. Mark Gooderman. He's a longtime Bay Area career consultant who is principal of MeaningfulCareers.com and a coach and trainer at Jewish Vocational Services. He was recently awarded a Purpose Prize fellowship given by Civic Ventures to honor social innovations in their encore career. So please welcome our speakers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Patrick, for the introduction. And thank you also to Patrick for organizing this event tonight and for inviting Coming of Age members to be here. I know there's many of you in the crowd tonight. And for letting us be one of the organizers and co-presenters. So when Patrick approached us a couple of months ago to organize this topic, we were very grateful he recognized us as a resource. And I think many of you know that they first scheduled us in the small room, and they moved us here in the big room. So obviously this topic is an important one to so many of us. So when Patrick approached us, we were thrilled to do it, but we also knew that we needed to collaborate with a great partner. And that partner was JVS, formerly known as Jewish Vocational Services, now by JVS. And we had heard rumors that they had this great presenter named Mark, and we're thrilled that they sent him on over here. And I'm going to speak a little bit and then turn the mic over to Mark. So Coming of Age is all about celebrating, as Patrick has said, people being 50-plus. No matter how many pluses are on that side of 50, we know this could be a time of growth and rediscovery, and a chance for people not just to continue to work or look for new work, but to perhaps find work that is meaningful and resonates more with your identity of who you are or perhaps who you want to be at this point in your life. It's never too old to think about what you want to be, who you want to be when you grow up. So during this reception outside, speaking to some of you and leading up to tonight, we had a chance to speak to many of you. And there's a lot of different statuses in the room. There are folks who are perhaps looking to advance in the current field they're in. Some of you are looking or needing to re-career. There's people who are employed, unemployed, retirees, folks looking to retire who might be interested in encore careers. We also got a sense, I got a sense of talking to folks, that you perhaps have brought varying notions of how volunteering fits into the job search. So perhaps when you've seen the articles out there, this was a surprise to you. But hopefully between tonight, between the articles and what I'll say later after Mark speaks, you will leave not having any doubts of how volunteering is a viable, important tool when you're searching for a job. Now, the one common thread we do share is we are all aware of the statistics that say that in this tough economic climate, it is hard for anybody to land that right job or perhaps a job at all. And that, yes, it perhaps is harder for us seasoned workers. But we are not here tonight to pay tribute to those stats. We also recognize there's research that says that as the boomer generation and older, we have been the most educated, entrepreneurial, and creative population and decade that's come along for a long time. And that's who we are, and that's what we'll continue to be, and we are going to continue to find ways to contribute to the communities we live in. So we can use Mark's tips on how to find a job. Yes, there are tips that are needed, so we don't let age discrimination deter us. So we can get into those interviews. So we're sitting across the table from a prospective employer, regardless of how old they are, and they might be younger than us. We will have the opportunity to convince that interviewer that you do bring the talent, the energy, the enthusiasm, and yes, even the seasoned experience and wisdom with you to get the job well done. So I currently had the opportunity to listen to Mark at a presentation. I can confirm the rumors are true. He is pretty awesome, and I look forward to learning more from him again tonight. So, Mark.
So let me get my notes organized here, and I'll get started. Thank you, Patrick, and thank you, Noreen, for the introductions. Good evening, everybody. Hi there. I got back in the corner there. Can you see up here? All right. And over there? Everybody can see in here? Great. So here's what I want to do. But before I give you actual specific tips and techniques and strategies to sort of move forward, I want to step back for a moment because I think a lot of people are stuck, overwhelmed, confused by the current status of the job market in the world of work, right? We've undergone a lot of change in a very, very short time, and the rules, I think either Noreen or Patrick were talking about, that we grew up with actually no longer apply. Whether they were written rules, whether we were told them, whether they were just expectations we created in our own heads, they don't seem to work very well anymore, and there's lots of reasons why that's true. I'll save that for another time. But the rules have very, very much changed. In fact, there's a new acronym making its way around. Some of you may know this one. They call it VUCA, V-U-C-A. Has anyone heard that yet? Ah, good. This is brand new. So listen to this. The world of work is volatile, uncertain, complex, and who wants to take a guess at what A might mean? Ambiguous. Is there anything positive in that acronym? Not one iota that I can see. And that actually is a pretty fair description of what a lot of people are experiencing. Whether you're currently employed, unemployed, in some sort of transition, this VUCA acronym seems to be a pretty on-point acronym and description of what we're living through. Here's the really bad news, to make it worse, is I don't think it's going to get any better. We have, what, it's 8.3 official unemployment at the U.S. level. How many people think that'll drop before the election? How many people think that'll drop much in 2013, no matter who gets elected? We have one optimist in the room. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm not sure it's going to drop significantly, and going back to what Noreen just said, I'm not sure it really matters for those of us in this room, because I think there's other ways to maneuver around the world that we're in right now, and that's mostly what I want to talk about. So again, before I get into any specific tips, I want to set a larger frame here that I think is really important, because my experience is that people are too caught up in what's right in front of them and thinking only about their next job. If you're unemployed, of course, that would make sense that you'd want to be thinking about how do you get reemployed sooner rather than later. But I'd like to suggest we all need to be thinking about a concept and a practice that I call lifelong employability. And I'm going to give you some descriptors that kind of lay that out. It's not a fancy term. It's actually very simple. But if you think about it, it's lifelong employability. So whether you're a boomer who's re-careering, looking for an encore career, you're coming back from retirement, you tried to retire and it didn't work and you want to get back, whatever your circumstance is, you're never too old, as far as I'm concerned, to be thinking about and practicing lifelong employability. And very simply, its definition is our capacity to find work, get work, keep work, and I'm going to put a little caveat on the work, meaningful work, and to develop ourselves continuously for the duration. In other words, learning and development must go on with our capacity to find it, get it, and keep meaningful work. And that I would suggest whether you're 20, 30, 60, or even 80, that is something we all need to learn how to do and be willing to practice in a world that is dominated by this acronym called VUCA, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. So let me tell you what I think is the way to lifelong employability. First of all, is you must be competent in some field or another. It could be your current field, it could be a new field, and so on. And there's three pieces of what I would describe as competence or competency. The first one is you must learn how and practice what I would call masterful performing or performance. So whether you're a newcomer in a new field, whether you're an old timer and you're really good at what you do, you must every day show up and give your best effort. There must be at least a few people in the room that are tired and bored and burned out from their current careers. You don't have to raise your hands on this one. But nevertheless, you still have an obligation to show up and give your best effort every day, regardless of what you think and feel about that career. That's called performing. And in today's work world, if you give anything less than that, you're likely to be among the first to be laid off when the going gets tough. Second piece is you must also be practicing designing your future. Even if you tell me you've only got 3 years to retirement, I would still suggest you practice designing your future. And there's three pieces you want to consider when you're designing your future. One would be what I would call your passion, energy, enthusiasm. It doesn't really matter what word you use. I actually prefer the word energy. What is it that gives you that energizes you every day? And the way I like to describe it to my clients is you get up Monday morning, go to work energized, really long, hard week. Friday afternoon when you stop, you're just as energized. You might be tired, but you can't wait to get back to work on Monday morning. That's what I'm talking about energy and passion and enthusiasm. That's one bucket of designing. Next bucket is what's known as what are your strengths? Strengths aren't exactly the same as skills. Skills are things that you do, but you may or may not like doing them. Anybody in the room have a skill set or use a skill set? Or that you do that you don't particularly like or maybe detest or are burned out on doing it or using because you've done it for so long? That's not a strength. A strength is something that you still do well and you love to do. That's a distinction between a skill and a strength. And you want to lean into your strengths, being cognizant of your skills. I'm going to tell you in a few minutes how to figure out what your strengths are, by the way. We'll get to that in a little bit later. And then the third part is what I would call imagination. And in the corporate world, they call this vision. What is your vision of the future? Whether it's something you've always dreamed about doing and finally now have the time and the resources to do, whether you're in a position where you can take a risk to do something that maybe is new, unique, and interesting, you need to kind of give that its due also. So we're talking about vision, strengths, and your energy or enthusiasm or passion. Those all need to come together and be aligned in both inside you. But those also must be aligned with the opportunities that the world of work presents for you. That might look like a job. It might look like a new business. It might look like a social enterprise. It could look like any number of things. But it's got to be aligned first inside you, and then it's got to be connected through reality testing and feasibility testing to the world of work. Okay. Third piece of competence, and that has to do with changing. I hear this all the time from my clients. They say, I like to change. I like change. I don't actually know a human being on the planet who actually likes to change. I think most of us change because of necessity or because of too much pain, and we eventually change something. And there's two levels of change, and you need to be sort of paying attention to both levels. First level is the simple one, and that is just responding to changing circumstances. Company gets a new piece of software. We need to learn the latest software so we can still function and do well. The other kind of change is what's known as transformational change. Transformational change simply means being able to change your mind and your behaviors as necessary so that you can continue to perform and design your future. So all three of these are interconnected. So it comes down to being able to perform well, design well, and change adroitly, adeptly, and also the change, as a caveat, to go through change without whining and screaming about it, which a lot of us like to do. All right? All right, so that competence, another way to think about the competence part of lifelong employability, it's the what of what we do. Now I want to suggest to you there's also a how to what we do. In my world, I call this intention. So if we've got competence as one piece of lifelong employability, the second piece is called intention, and it also has three subcategories. First one is what's known in some circles as mindfulness. Mindfulness in my world, the way I think about it, having to do with careers and lifelong employability, two parts. One, it has to do with taking full responsibility for your work life. This is why the statistics ultimately don't make any difference. Because taking full responsibility means regardless of whether we have 2% unemployment or 20% unemployment, there are still opportunities out there if you look hard enough. You may have to look a lot harder if it's the 20 rather than the 2, but nevertheless, you are the responsible party. And also, the second piece of that means being alert to opportunities that present themselves. That might mean that you are opportunistic, but it also means you're keeping antenna, your eyes, your ears, your sensibilities open so that you can notice and see things that maybe other folks don't see or see them sooner than other folks might see so you can activate those. So mindfulness is one piece of intention. The second one is develop a positive attitude. And I know how hard this is for myself, but also for many of the clients that I've seen, especially those people who've been out of work for a very long time. Positive attitude is hard, but it's necessary. It's believing and trusting in a future that's filled with unlimited possibilities that you can achieve. You have to have a self-belief that there are possibilities that are achievable. If you have anything less than that, your attitude is going to hurt you and will probably show up when you go to interviews, when you start talking to people, when you start networking. And I'm not talking about anything Pollyanna-ish, by the way. I'm talking about being realistic, but having a positive attitude when you go out into the world. That starts with you framing your own experience in a positive way. The third piece of intention is what I call having a sense of perspective. This is probably actually the most subtle part, and it really means understanding the context and the frame that you are living in and that you are coming from. This might be your cultural background. This might be your work background. This might be your family background, positive and negative, by the way. It's the stories that infuse you and the story you're ultimately going to tell out in the world. Without understanding your own context and knowing how it impacts the ultimate story you tell, you're going to end up tripping yourself up occasionally and perhaps even self-sabotaging yourself without recognizing it. Okay, so it's real important. So we got the three things. Mindfulness, positive attitude, and sense of perspective make up intention. So the third piece is actually the deepest of the three. So I had competence is what you do. Intention is how you do it. And now I want to share with you why you do what you do. This is what I know as purpose, and it's the key to finding meaningful work. And there are four kinds of purpose that people have going on, sometimes all at the same time. Sometimes in sequence, sometimes it's developmental, and sometimes it's hard to know what one's purpose is. And I'll spend a little bit of time talking about how to get at this in a minute. The first level of purpose is what I've identified as a pragmatic purpose. Pragmatic purpose. You can probably figure out what that is. That's work as work, work as a means to an end, and work to make a living. There are many people have a pragmatic purpose and go do their fun stuff, their meaningful stuff on the weekends and in their community activities. Right? Sometimes a lot of the career books kind of put that down, by the way. And I think that's a mistake. I think everybody has a right to a purely pragmatic purpose if that's what's going on for you. The next level of purpose is what's known as integration. Synonym for that would be balance. A lot of people's purpose is to have a balance between their work life and their non-work life, family and work. Any way you dichotomize or divide up the world, many people are oriented and driven by a purpose around integration and balance. Third one is slightly different, and it's what's known as legacy. A lot of us baby boomers are driven by the legacy and still are. This is one of the reasons why a lot of baby boomers don't want to retire, because they don't feel like they've made their mark yet. Legacy is about the mark you're going to leave on the world after you're gone. What will people remember about me and my work when I retire, when I'm gone, and so on and so forth? And so it's work as contribution and leaving something of lasting value. This is not just for baby boomers, by the way. This is deeply human. And actually, a lot of the Gen Ys, the millennials, a lot of you who work with them, they're also driven in a big way by the same value, same purpose. And the final one, which is kind of the deepest, if you will, or the most spiritual, it's called a transcendent purpose, a transcendent purpose. And again, a lot of baby boomers resonate with this one too. And this is where whatever you define as spiritual or religious, work for you is a spiritual or even a sacred endeavor. You might call yourself a healer. You might call yourself a shaman, whatever language you use. That's work as a transcendent experience. Now, most people usually have a preference for one of the four, but all four often show up in people's profile, if you will. Now, before I get into my specific remarks, I want to tell you the best way to get at your purpose, if any of you are kind of wrestling with that or a little confused about that, it's actually a very simple little exercise you can do. You have to step back from your thoughts and your feelings and ask yourself in a very honest and deep way, what is most important to me? What is fundamentally most important to me? It's a values question. And the good news is there's all kinds of career books out there. There's all kinds of card sorts. There's all kinds of instruments that can help you figure that out. But you have to step back now and then and ask yourself, what is most important to me? I actually recommend that people do this once a year. They sit down and they do themselves a real important thing and step back from their life, from their work, and maybe spend an hour, 2 hours annually on a birthday, on an anniversary, New Year's Eve, whatever it might be, and sit down and write out what's most important to me for this upcoming year. It's a great way to get yourself grounded. It's a great way to get focused. And it's a great way to anchor those other two things I talked about around intention and around competence. And if you actually think about this, they kind of go deeper. We have competence out there, which is what's visible to the world. Intention is the next layer, which is kind of between you and the world. And the deep stuff, the value stuff, is deep inside you, but that's how you articulate your purpose. Okay. So that kind of sets a frame, and I know I went through that pretty quickly. And if you have any questions later on, I'm happy to expand on any of these concepts. So let me offer you approximately 11 specific techniques and tips. Strategies for the job search. And this is particularly targeted at, I think everybody here is 50 or over, but if you're not, that this stuff will probably apply to, but this is specifically targeted at those of us who are 50 or over. So, and these are not in any particular order, although there's three that I want to kind of emphasize because I think they're critical. So the first one is you want to emphasize your strengths through accomplishment stories. Remember I used the word strengths instead of skills. You can certainly talk about your skills, but I want you to be thinking about what are my strengths. And you emphasize these through what career coaches and counselors know as accomplishment stories. A lot of you know this technique if you've read What Color's Your Parachute. You've done this exercise. But basically what it says is you step back and you do an inventory of the accomplishments you've had over your work life. Doesn't matter whether they're recent or they go back 20, 30, 40, even 50 years. And you pick them apart by saying, what was the problem or the situation? It's kind of the top line. The middle line is, what did I do to solve or resolve this? That's where your skills and strengths are. And perhaps most importantly, what results did I get from doing this thing, solving this problem? Because in today's work world, it's not enough to just tell your story. Know your stories. You must also be very, very clear on the results you got, because that's what employers are asking for today. Okay? If you're not able to articulate the results from your strengths demonstration, your strengths stories, your story is incomplete and you're going to get beat out almost every time you go to interview, because somebody's going to know how to communicate this way. Okay? So emphasize your strengths through your accomplishment stories. Second one, hopefully nobody in this room is struggling with this one, but you want to get comfortable with technology and use it appropriately. Is everybody in the room comfortable with technology? Okay, guess what? You got some work to do. And you all know this. Because if you're not comfortable with technology and you're not using it appropriately, for better or for worse, you look like you're old. Everybody get me on that? This is not a discrimination statement. It's a fact. In today's work world, if you aren't comfortable in using the relevant current technology, you're old and behind the curve. And that just gives somebody an excuse to say, we can't hire you because it would take too long to get you up to speed. That's a reality in today's marketplace. Okay. Following that, and similar, is you want to create and manage your internet presence. Is everybody up to speed and current with LinkedIn? I heard a few no's. We need 100% yes next time we get together. All right, so some of you who are not up to speed on your internet presence, particularly LinkedIn, that's a piece of homework you need to do. JVS has classes on that if you want to come to JVS and come see us. There's lots of tutorials online. It's really not that hard to do. It's just one of those annoying things, kind of like doing your resume. And by the way, does everybody have their resume up to date? If you don't, you got to do that too. Lots of homework here, all right? Which takes me to the next one. Your resume not only needs to be up to date, but it also needs to be tailored and crafted every time you use it. Using a generic resume was never a very effective strategy, but in today's marketplace, it's a prescription for never getting anybody to say, you're our candidate, or at least we'll do a screening interview. The reason why is that big companies in particular, but a lot of smaller ones, are using scanning systems now. You all know this? So your resume is rarely seen by any live eyes until when? Until after it's in a system and they pull it up and it has to be a match to the job description. And the bad news today is if your resume is not pretty close to 100% match, you're going to have pretty much a zero chance of getting a screening interview. That's encouraging, isn't it? No, I'm not. No. I told you I'd tell you. Anyway, point being is resume is only one tool, okay? Resume is only one tool, and it must be tailored and crafted for the specific situation, which means you have to do some of your study about the company and the job description before you even apply for the job. A lot of people do their study after they've applied, and I got to tell you, that's too late. You're already behind the curve when you do that. Following that, this is one of my big ones, and this is one of the ways you get around the resume dilemma. And that is you want to practice regular informational interviewing. Everybody have a sense of what informational interviewing is? It's a form of networking, but it's not necessarily job-related. It's more advice-related, information-related, help-related. I need your help on the following things. I need to learn about company X. I need to learn about industry or function Y. And then we'll see about applying for a job. It's like a precursor to actually hardcore interviewing. But the rule here is you want to learn how to do it and do it regularly, whether you're in transition or not. Because informational interviewing does a couple things for you. It keeps you connected to people that you should know. It helps you reconnect with people that you let go of. It helps keep you current in a field or a new field. And it helps you to recognize opportunities that you couldn't find any other way. So one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is most of the jobs that are open at any given time in this wide world of the Bay Area, the vast majority of them never get advertised. Do you know that? And the ones that get advertised, that small fraction of the total, many of those are already filled. Do y'all know that? If they're not filled, they have a pre-identified candidate. Your odds are not good if you're only interviewing for job openings that are visible and posted. The only way that I know of that you're going to find out about these that are not posted is by doing good informational interviewing and networking on a regular basis. And it works a lot better to do it when you don't really need to be doing it. Now, I realize that takes a lot of discipline. That's the rub here, isn't it? Okay? Next one. Seek out age-friendly employers. This is specific for those of us that are over 50, and some of us are even over 60. Seek out age-friendly employers. So the question becomes, who are they and how do you find them? Well, the best way I know is go to AARP. They craft a really nice list of age-friendly employers. I'm not saying become a member of AARP, but you could find this list easily. So I had a client just the other day, 66 years old, great skills, great talent. He wanted to go work for Google. Good luck. It's possible, but it's a very, very, very long shot. The average age of Google is 31, to my understanding. His second choice, guess what that was? Facebook. They're even younger. Their CEO, I think, is only 28. How about that? So seek out age-friendly employers. My wife was unemployed for a couple years recently. She went through this like some of you in the room. And she actually got a screening interview at a company called Electronic Arts. You know Electronic Arts? Gaming. My wife, I won't give away her age, but she's in our age range. They took one look at her and they said, thank you very much. And she was gone. They gave her a 15-minute cursory interview. And even if they had brought her back, she wouldn't want to work there anyway. She doesn't play video games, so why would you want to work for them anyway? But they weren't interested. Okay? Another one. This one's a little tricky and maybe a little sensitive, but I'll say it anyway because I say it to all my clients. You need to pay attention to your fitness and appearance. I'm not suggesting that you go get a facelift or color your hair or dye your hair. That's pretty radical. But what you want to do is you want to make sure, first of all, you're comfortable in your own skin and the clothes that you wear, and that that is current and modern. There are some of us baby boomers who are still dressing like we were in college. I don't see anybody in this room like that, but I have a lot of my clients who come to me, and they're wearing clothes that they wore 30 years ago. Don't do that. Because if you were to go to Google, what do you think they're going to think of you? Not much. Besides the fact that you're old, you look old. And that's not a good way to show up. Another one. This one's really, really critical, and this is a mistake that a lot of people make, especially as we get older. Make your stories, from your pitch to your interview and everything in between, make them current and relevant, and use language that your audience uses. A lot of us are still telling the same stories we told from 10, 20, 30 years ago. That's a mistake, because frankly, it's just history to many people. And how many people are actually interested in your personal history? Not very many. Make your stories relevant. Tell them in language that people you're telling to are familiar and comfortable with. Use their jargon, not yours. This means you have to do possibly some due diligence, some feasibility study, some research, and so on. Next one, avoid age references. This is pretty tricky. And what I mean by this is you walk into somebody's office and they have a picture of their kids, 3 and 5, and you say, gee, those look just like my grandkids. Oops. You just gave away your age for free. Don't do that. But it's an easy thing and it's an easy mistake to make. Don't make age references. You got to be mindful of your language and so on and so forth, because it's not a matter of just giving away your age. It's just that don't give the other side, the person who's looking to hire you, any reason to say no to you. You want to exude energy, confidence, clarity, and the age thing ought to be an irrelevancy. And if you bring it up, you've just made it a topic of conversation. See, they can't ask you about it, but if you bring it up, it's become fair game, at least in their decision process. And finally, not quite finally, but my last big one, this is another tricky one. You want to dismiss any age discrimination thoughts that enter into your mind. Would everyone agree with me that there is age discrimination going on in the workplace? And it's rampant in many cases. I hear stories from my clients all the time. And we know that. There's also another kind of discrimination going on. For those of you who've been unemployed for a while, you know the longer you're unemployed, the harder it is to get back to work. There is real discrimination going on as you stretch out your time for being unemployed. But what you need to do is recognize that legal or not, right or wrong, fair or not, it's an irrelevant subject for you to bring into your thinking. Because the minute you do, it starts taking your positive energy into a negative space. And once you do that, you've just dampened your chances for getting a new job or getting new work. So I encourage, and I sometimes have to work with some of my clients very hard on this, because they swear to me they have a legitimate reason for a lawsuit. And while I might say, go seek the advice of an attorney before you move on that one, I still tell them you ought to put that thought aside for now. Because if word gets out that you're filing a lawsuit or even thinking about it, you've taken what limited chances you had to begin with now down to zero. And besides that, it's going to affect your attitude when you show up anyway. So you have to find a way to set it aside. And if that's tricky for you, that's something you'll need to work on. And then finally, sort of conclude my remarks, I want to kind of turn it back over to Noreen. And this is really important, and this has to do with whether you're currently employed or unemployed. And that is, if you're thinking of a career transition, if you're thinking about moving into a new area, trying to get back to work, you want to seriously consider doing some significant volunteer work. This would probably be true for any age, but particularly for those of us in our age bracket, one of the ways you can show you're still vital, still able to learn, pick up new skills, make new connections, contribute to your community so you're expressing your values, and that would be to find some meaningful, significant volunteer experience that you can not only make new connections, that's one obvious part, but also hopefully build new skills, and thirdly, give back to your community while you might be going through any difficult transition in your own life. And we all know that by giving, it often takes away a lot of the pain and a lot of the heat for whatever struggles we might be facing. So I think with that, I'll conclude, and I'll be happy to take questions at the end. Noreen, let me turn it back over to you. Thank you.
So Patrick had mentioned, made reference to my Irish name. He did not, that I came from New York. So when you talk about VUCA, I'm glad I shot out my A suggestion because I was not thinking ambiguous. Thank you, Mark. And thanks for, speaking about volunteering. Because as Mark said, volunteering is a valuable tool to utilize when you're looking for a job. Now, let me just get out of the way in regards to volunteering. Yes, it'd be great if you could get paid for the skills and talent you have. And that is what we're striving to have here. We do hear that some people are not comfortable volunteering because they want to get paid. And yes, you should want to get paid. There's nothing wrong with wanting to get paid. And it's not like the nonprofits are out there trying to get something for free. They're not trying to take advantage. It's tough times for everybody. And their budgets are shrinking. Their funding is evaporating. So it really is an opportune time for you to step in, bring some talent, bring some skills, help them out, and in the end, help yourself as well. Now, there have been some articles out there that are going to speak about what I'm going to say, so I will cover them somewhat quickly because we do want to leave time for questions. But to, reference back to what Mark spoke about, why would you volunteer? One of the first reasons is you want to maintain or build your skills. As Mark said, you don't want to appear antiquated. So whether you need to learn new technology skills, and what Mark did not say is JVS is an awesome place to go learn Microsoft Office, not just LinkedIn. They have Excel. You can go there for free and take multiple sessions, multiple levels. So if you don't have the computer skills, you can get them. They're not hard. I've been doing it. It's really not rocket scientist. You can go out there and do it. We offer Facebook training. So again, get the skills, and when you have the skills, be it technology skills or whatever skills you have, marketing skills, writing skills, public speaking skills, keep using them. Keep prove that you're using them so that your skills don't look antiquated. Another benefit for volunteering, if you are looking to perhaps enter a new field, you can try it out. You can try it out for free without committing. We have so many folks who come back and say, I want to be a teacher, which is great, but do you really want to be in a room full of kids? So volunteer. Do that and see if that really does work for you. Whatever it is you're looking to do, get into the nonprofit. And again, a lot of nonprofits are not looking for long-term things, so you're not signing your life away in blood. You will still have time to job hunt. You will still have time to take a job if you get one. But again, experiment, explore with what it is you think you may want to do at this point in your life. Volunteering might be a way to get in the back door. As Mark had mentioned, so many paid positions are not being advertised. And that includes the nonprofits as well. You get into an organization, you become a known quantity, especially if you're doing a good job. We have a member organization that Diane and I were talking with recently, Diane Krantz, who is our Director of Community Engagement. We were talking with a group called WISE, and they were mentioning how they had a staff meeting. And they took a moment to notice that everybody around that table started with that organization as a volunteer. So it is a way to get in. It is a way to let people know who they are. And as Mark spoke about before, the informational interviews, know what's going on in the field, volunteering provides you a way to network. Meet who's doing what? What's an organization doing? What are the trends? What are the challenges? All topics you want to be able to address when you're in an interview, when you're looking at a new job. Being in the field as a volunteer lets you meet the players who are conducting this work, lets you stay abreast of the field, where it's going, how you can fit in. It also will give you perhaps current references. Again, for many people who've been out of work for a long time, or perhaps have been the same job for a long for many, many years, if not decades, you may not have a lot of references. So this keeps your references fresh. It might even give you some references who are in the same age group as the folks who are interviewing you. And that is, I personally believe, something not to overlook. If you're going to get a reference from their peer, it's going to speak well, especially if they are thinking about your age. It's going to keep your resume updated. It's going to close any gaps you might have in there from not working for a while. It's also going to make you look like a doer, like Mark had said. It shows that instead of you're sitting around during this time of being unemployed, just working on trying to get a job, you're proving to a prospective employer that you have ambition, you have the means to get a job done. You're willing to work no matter what it takes to do something. You want to work for free. Not that an employer should hire you for free. But you are willing to do things, and you're willing to make a difference. These are qualities that employers like to see in their employees. You do something. You step up. You answer the call. Now, Mark did not address, I don't think, too much about the number of no's you get in job hunting. If you've been job hunting, you know you get a lot of no's, no thank yous, or just no comments. Your resume just kind of falls into this deep vacuum of nowhere land. Volunteer, you get a lot more yeses. And, you know, that's not a bad thing to hear. You know, it's a morale booster. It gets you out of the house. People want your skills. You can feel good about what you're doing. And I don't want to underemphasize the need to hear a yes once in a while when you're hearing a whole lot of no's. And finally, because of all the reasons I just listed, employers are seeing volunteer experience more and more equal to paid experience. There's been enough research to show that if there's two people being considered for a job, the one who volunteered can be the tiebreaker. You want to make sure you have that in your check of yeses. Volunteering has led to jobs. Now, you want to make sure, though, you do volunteer in a productive way, in a way that meets your skills. Because you don't want to be no good at your volunteer job. If you're no good at your volunteer job, that's always going to be worse. You're not going to feel good. You're not going to get a reference. You might get a bad reference. I mean, it's all going to backfire. So you really do want to make sure the organization can use you well and that you also are applying your skills. And this is where we think coming of age can come in and really help you. We do want to help you find volunteer opportunities that work for you. And this is not academic for us. Much of our staff and many of our members have walked this talk. We have found new purpose and passion, and we have volunteered our way into new careers and new jobs. Diane Krantz, who I referenced before, Director of Community Engagement, is in the back of the room there. You can talk to her about what she accomplished from moving from one field to the other. Eric Nelson, our talent coach, who I'll talk a little more about later. Also, myself, we can tell you the personal stories, either of ours or of our members, of how volunteering did pay off for us. So we get it. Another way we help our members is we offer what we call Explore Your Future workshops, which I'm going to go to the notes I was scribbling. If I could read my tortured handwriting, it basically is what everything Mark was speaking about. These workshops are to help you build your confidence and to gain clear direction, keys to job hunting success. It's a four-part series, and in this series, to quote Mark, we're going to help you find your competency, design your future, find your vision, set your intention, find your balance, think about your legacy, answer your value question, and help you create your stories. So that when you move forward in the job market, you do so with greater confidence. So the four-part series, it helps you. I have the same ring, which I love, and I keep thinking, my kids are calling me. No, I love that ring. But anyway, so the Explore Your Future workshop, we help you look forward by first having you look back. So at the end, you really have to find a story that resonates with your life. And you've built a plan, and you know what direction you want to go in, and you have the confidence to go that way. Now, another way we can help you in the volunteer search is we have partnering organizations who we work with. We have them go through a workshop called Learning Lab. We want to make sure they know how to utilize the skills and talents you bring. We have close to 50 organizations. They come to us looking for the skills people in our age group have to offer. And some of the positions we have currently open or filled, one is a newsletter editor for San Francisco Village, which one of our members here tonight has been helping them with, and they're quite happy with all that you have offered them. We also have an opportunity to either bring or to learn video production skills, and Tom is somewhere in the room tonight, and I know he is involved in that opportunity. Tom is taking your tickets. We have opportunities that have allowed people to build health education curriculum, to serve as community educators, to mentor in financial planning or business development, and to tutor either seniors in computer skills or kids who are learning to read. And I know somebody here tonight was speaking about the volunteer work that they're doing with Community Technology Network, helping seniors learn about computers, and I don't see where he is right now. But there are a lot of great, great volunteer opportunities. And how we help you find the perfect match is Eric Nelson, our talent coach, who you should make a point of talking with after this session. Eric knows our organizations. He knows what they're looking for. If you become a member of Coming of Age, and if you want, Eric will get to know you as well. And we'll work with you to help you find the volunteer opportunity that fits your job hunting search at this point in your life. So I hope you consider becoming a member of Coming of Age community. We have a lot of unique opportunities, but I'm watching the clock there. So I will not go on. I'll just encourage you to make use of the much literature we have in the back. And I'll end it there, so we have a lot of time for questions. So the plan is you're going to pass questions in some direction, I think to the left. Patrick will continue collecting them, or do we have them all?
I think we have them all.
Do you have them all?
I think there's a few more.
And Mark and I will read them and answer them. And Mark has your glasses on, so you can actually see what people wrote.
All right, so let me
get over here.
All right, so here we go. Most of these are pretty specific, but let me just, first question is, isn't age discrimination illegal? Yes, it is, but it happens all the time. And there are lots of ways it gets masked and lots of ways that you're not going to have much power to move around it. What I suggest to all my clients is accept the fact that it's illegal, accept the fact that it's practiced, and you show up as if age makes no difference. You show up with clarity. You show up with energy. You show up leading with your strengths. You show up with your what's called your value proposition, your brand, and what you can do for them to solve problems they have. And on top of that, you emphasize that because I've done this a time or two, perhaps longer than other folks have done this, I make very few mistakes anymore. I can get this done faster, better, and with fewer mistakes than probably anybody else you're talking to today. Try something like that. In other words, turn your age into a positive. So here we go. Here's a nice question. I keep thinking that we over 50 should create enterprises and then hire each other.
Yeah.
What a great idea. In fact, there is an organization just down the street here called Civic Ventures, founded by Mark Friedman. You should look into that. They're promoting the whole notion of an encore career. If you've heard that term, that's where it comes from. They coined that. And they're really talking about people over 50, over 60, whatever, later in life, in their encore years, as it were, starting to do different and more meaningful kind of work. I don't think have explicitly set up anything quite like the questioner's asking, but I love the idea of all of us banding together. Think about all the talent that's in this room. If we could harness it, we could still do some amazing things for the rest of our work lives, huh? So great question. I love that one. All right, here's one. I'll see if I can read this one. There seems to be no way that your age is not known in background, because background checks are done even before an interview, right? Also, I don't like putting my social security number on applications or internet, and yet it is now required. Please comment. You can probably figure out the answer to this one is if you don't answer all the questions on the application, like it or not, you have no chance. It's that simple. This takes you back to the importance of networking. The idea, if you network well and do informational interviewing well, is you become a known quantity inside the company, inside the organization you're interested in, before you fill out the application. Then your resume becomes more of a calling card than an introduction. It's always harder when your application and your resume are the methods you get introduced to somebody in a company. Because then you're just competing with everybody and you don't look any different or any better than anybody else who may have just as impressive a background as you. Here's one. I just obtained an interview in a government department. Can I ask, is there already a chosen candidate? And I understand the temptation. The answer is no. Everybody recognize that? I know you're tempted. But if so, you could ask, what do I need to do to compete? That's a fairer question. And rather than say compete, is what specific strengths and capabilities are you looking for? What are you expecting this person to do in their first 90 days on the job? And then you need to say, I can do that, and I can do it very well, and I can do it with very little training because I already know how to do this. Any comments? You want it? Okay. Don't give away age. Do I list my year of graduation? And I presume this means college graduation? The answer is no. You don't need to list it. People are going to know your age almost the minute you walk in the room. They're going to make probably within 5 years, they'll know. But you don't have to put it on your resume. And then that brings back another question about how far back should you go on a resume? I'm going to frame it in a different way. Does anybody in the room have a resume that's more than 2 pages long? If it is, you got to shorten it. That's more the guide. It's not so much how far back you go. But the real driver here is whatever your job objective is, whether it's actually stated on your resume or only stated in your cover letter, you should go as far back as your experience indicates that you can do that job. So it might be 10 years in some cases. It might be 30 in other cases. It's dependent on the objective that you're going for. This is what I meant by tailoring and crafting your resume for every single job opening. What I recommend with my clients is that you create a master resume. This could be 10 pages long. It might have every detail of every job you've ever had. Then you take data out of that to craft a unique resume for every single job. It's like having a master application. You should also have one of those too, by the way. That way you don't have to think, now what years did I do that job? That's really annoying to have to do. Okay, here's a couple that came a little bit later. So regarding meaningful work, it can be very hard to find. What are 3 tips you have for unemployed job seekers about how to find meaningful work? Paid, besides volunteering. I got that, yeah. All right. So the first thing I recommend is what I emphasized previously is get clear about what your own values are. Okay? Be real clear about what your own values and what your purpose is. Because that's going to help you locate employers and places of work that are going to be in alignment with your values. By starting with that alignment, you're going to come across as much more authentic and enthusiastic when you start having communications with them versus just going to get any old job because you need to go back to work. 3 tips. Another tip, this has nothing to do with meaningful work directly, but lead with your strengths. I've said this several times, but I want to emphasize that. It's not about your skills, because if you're going to do an encore career, why would you want to do things that you might have been very good at in your past, but no longer really want to do anymore? So get real clear about your core strengths. An exercise I have all my clients do, if you've got 10 seconds to tell me what your top 3 strengths are, what are they? Get real clear. You got 10 seconds to tell me what your top 3 strengths are. What are they? Now, if I'm an interviewer, I'm going to ask you to explain, expand, and give me an example of those things. But you got to be real clear because that becomes a key part of your pitch. And then the third thing that I would recommend is that you search out employers and places of employment that somehow align reasonably closely, at least on paper, through the website, through any publications, through any conferences you might go to, between your values, strengths, and what they say. Now, you all need to realize that whatever mission, vision, and value statement they have on their wall, you need to realize that's an statement of aspirations, not a statement of operation. This is a mistake that a lot of people make. They figure if there's a statement on the wall, it must be how we operate. And people end up being very disappointed and getting cynical. What you need to realize is they do that. They don't always say this, but they should say this, that these are statements of aspiration. What you're looking to do is align your aspirations with their aspirations and recognize that we're both going to fall something short of that. That's realistic. Okay? The number of businesses only want you to apply online. As a result, I feel you lose the chance to make a good first impression. Is there any way around this? And I've already said this a couple times. I'll say it again. And Noreen was getting at this too. And that is by doing a fair amount of letting them see you in action in other ways. Volunteer work is a great way to do that. Community events, go to conferences, volunteer to host a conference. I mean, be a note taker or registrar at a conference. But certainly any kind of networking that you can do is to your advantage. And for those of you in the room that are more introverted in personality style, which there's at least a few of you in the room that are, this is the hardest part of the job search, by the way. It's common sense advice. It just makes sense, but it's not an easy thing to practice, is it? For those of you that are on the introverted side of the scale of personality types. All right, so I think that's about it for us. I just want to put in a very quick little plug for JVS because I did not say very much about JVS. JVS stands for Jewish Vocational Services. It has been shortened very much like KFC used to be Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's now KFC for all kinds of reasons. We are JVS. It's specifically a branding thing. It's a lot easier to say. And we take the word Jewish out of it, not because we're embarrassed by that, but because we want people to know it's open to anybody in the community. The really good news about JVS is it's right around the corner here. It's at 225 Bush. Virtually all of our services are free. It's very easy to sign up. You don't have to pay any membership dues. The only thing you'll pay for is if you need one-on-one career coaching, and I'm the guy you'd come see, you have to pay for that. But even that is well below market rates for San Francisco. But if you want to go to workshops, if you need to bring out your computer skills up to date, if you want to, tomorrow afternoon, for example, we have an informational interview panel, which is actually very cool and very interesting. We're going to have three people, one from Salesforce, I don't remember the other two, but they're going to talk about the importance of informational interviewing, how to do it, and so on. So I actually put in a plug for that event. There are actually seats open for that. So go onto the website, sign up. I don't think you even have to fill out an application for JVS. But if you want to do the workshops, it's very easy to get involved, and they're all free. Just go to, it's just jvs.org. Very easy to get to. And for those of you, I know a few of you introduced yourselves before, you have experience at JVS. It's a wonderful organization. We really care about what we do, and we care about helping you get back to work, figure out how to make a change, and so on. We'll do everything in our power to help you out with that, whatever your situation is. So I think with that, we'll stop for the evening, and I'm happy to hang around for a bit, Noreen too. So thank you all so much.